We're ready to roll. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. We're starting a new topic. We actually went, how many shows did we go? We went 19 shows on the topic of men and women. And we hardly even got into the topic of marriage, which we could have gone with about 400 shows on that, but I did think that was really my field of expertise, so I'm going to leave that for somebody else. And as I mentioned, the Grihastha Division team has these monthly teleconferences. So if you're interested, go to their website and you can get in on their teleconferences, which are very valuable if you're married and you want to upgrade your relationship. Even if you don't have a bad one, if you just want to make a good one better. So now we're going to talk about a subject that I find profoundly interesting. I also find it quite amazing. I also find it somewhat elusive. And that is the mind. But in addition to the mind, I also titled this show, Saving Yourself from Yourself. Because in understanding and dealing with the mind, one of the things that inevitably comes up is the mind often works against our own self-interest. And so sometimes we're doing things to harm ourselves, or sometimes we're getting in the way of our own progress. So we're going to deal with that. And we're going to deal with more subtle aspects of the mind. You have the conscious mind, you have the subconscious mind, which affects the conscious mind. We're also going to deal with beliefs, because at the heart of what the mind is thinking, at the heart of what the mind is telling us and doing and operating, you will find beliefs under that, often beliefs which you are not even aware of. And if those beliefs change, then the mind's thoughts change to support those beliefs. So it's going to be interesting. I don't know how long we're going to be going. But I do know this. I know that for the next month I'm going to be traveling. So I cannot give 100% guarantee that every Tuesday evening I'm going to have internet connection. But I will, if I do, I will make every effort to have one. And definitely I will do the show if I do. I'll be traveling with my family. And I definitely know one Tuesday night where I won't have one, so let me tell you when it is. It's going to be, well, I'll tell you the week before, but it's going to be the last week of July. I don't think I'll have internet access. Maybe I can get someone else to come do the show. So, now, I want to read something that's kind of funny for all of those of you out there who have come early to the show. Some of you have come late, so I like to reward the ones who have come early. So who's come early? Oh, Manjesh, Bhakti and Carol, you get a treat. Bhakti Patrick and Bliss and whoever else is watching who is not on chat, you're going to get to hear something. It's quite funny, I think. But it's interesting. And there's some meaning to it that I think you'll appreciate. This is called If. If you can start the day without caffeine, if you can always be cheerful, ignoring aches and pains, if you can resist complaining and boring people with your troubles, if you can eat the same food every day and be grateful for it, if you can understand when your loved ones are too busy to give you any time, if you can overlook it when those who love you take it out on you, when through no fault of yours something goes wrong in their life, if you can take criticism and blame without resentment, if you can resist treating a rich friend better than a poor friend, if you can face the world without lies and deceit, if you can conquer tension without medical help, if you can relax without liquor, if you can sleep without the aid of drugs, if you can honestly say that deep in your heart that you have no prejudice against creed, color, religion, gender, preferences, or politics, then you have reached the same level of development as your dog. What do you think of that? You know, one time Srila Prabhupada said the humans are below animals. Like we always talk about, come to the human form of life. Human form of life is above the animals. Prabhupada said, no, actually, the humans are aborting their children. The animals don't do that. So the humans are below the animals. And reading this, you can see it's true. In so many ways, we're below the animals. Anyway, that has nothing to do with the mind. But I thought I'd throw it in there. So Bhaktin Carol is requesting to be saved from herself. Okay, so now, one of the reasons that I wanted to discuss this subject, the mind, is because in many, many places, or we could say it's basically all-pervading through our philosophy, and in many, many places Prabhupada writes about this, or you could say in some way everything that Prabhupada writes about has some connection to the principle that yoga means to control the mind. Because, not only that yoga means to control the mind, but the purpose of yoga is to control the mind. And then we take that another step further, and what does mind control mean? It means to think of Krishna. So the ultimate goal, manmana, bhavamad bhakto, the ultimate goal is to always think of Krishna. Krishna says, think of me in the 9th chapter. He says, think of me in the 18th chapter. He says, here, I will teach you how to do yoga by thinking of me, 7th chapter, 1st verse. And in Nectar of Devotion, we find that the main principle is to always think of Krishna and never forget him. And Prabhupada wrote me and he said, the whole point of Krishna consciousness is to become absorbed in thoughts of Krishna. And then we have Krishna teaching us in the Gita about the necessity of controlling the mind, and Arjuna saying, I can't do it. Krishna saying, yes, you can. You have to practice. You have to act by right means. You have to be detached. It is possible. Then we have the whole 6th chapter of the Gita about the yogi achieves a destination according to what he's thinking of the time of death. Not only the yogi, everybody. Whatever you think of, ante kale, at the time of death, at the end. At the ante means end. Kalevaram, when you give up the body, whatever you're thinking, you will attain. So the mind is a central point in the practice of Krishna consciousness. An uncontrolled mind means an uncontrolled person, means an uncontrolled life. A controlled mind is the opposite. So we can see how important is it. You can see how important it is. But how to control the mind is not always simple. And to even understand what the mind is and how it functions is sometimes a little elusive to us, or a little ambiguous to us. So we want to explore these things. And the first thing that I would like to explore is just for us to begin this subject so we can really get into it and really benefit from it, is to just consider the power of the mind in terms of what it can do to degrade us and what it can do to elevate us, even against our own will. It can elevate us sometimes against our will. It can degrade us against our will. And the power of the mind is such that it is a force that we have to reckon with, because sometimes that force is not in alignment with what we desire. Not in alignment with the values of our life. It's not always in alignment with the goals of our life. And when it's not in alignment, it creates a situation in which we're being tortured. Because there's this mind living with us who is not us but has influence over us. That's a really awkward situation if you think about it. That we're living with someone who is not always congruous with what we want, is not always congruous with what we're interested in, what we're trying to achieve. And it's very powerful. And it's so powerful that when it is aligned with what we want, it can take us to our goals. It can take us even beyond what we think we can do. Or we can program the mind to take us to greater places than we think we can achieve. All we have to do is expand our thinking, strive for higher goals or greater goals, and the mind will work to take us there. It will also do the opposite. If we meditate on things which will be degrading to our lives, the mind will carry us there, even beyond our own ability to stop it. So I think we can conclude that one of the most valuable things we could learn for our spiritual life and for our material life is the ability to control our mind. Because if we are not controlling our mind, then we're pretty much at the mercy of the whims of the mind and at the whims of the environment, because the environment is affecting how the mind thinks. So if we want more control of our situation, and certainly we need it if we want to direct our lives towards Krishna, if you want to direct it towards any goal, you need it. It seems to me to be one of the most valuable tools we could ever employ or ever learn to employ, is the ability to be the one behind the steering wheel rather than the car driving itself and we're sitting in the back of the seat. So another along this line, I'd give another thought, which I find very powerful meditation. Think of the mind like a field. And if the soil is fertile, then whatever you plant, whatever seed you plant, will grow. And if you plant a seed of a tomato plant, what's going to grow? A peach tree? A carrot? No, a tomato is going to grow. And sometimes we plant the seeds of certain thoughts and we expect to get other results. And we might say, why is this happening to me? Particularly if it's something negative, we'll say, well, why is this happening to me? It's happening because we planted the seed, and the seed is sprouting. It doesn't happen by accident. So every thought is like a seed. And that's the power of the mind, because it will grow that seed. So if we plant proper thoughts, that's what will grow. And we'll be pulled in that particular direction. And if we plant negative thoughts, if we plant evil thoughts, if we plant thoughts which are based on our lower nature, then those thoughts expand. There's a saying, whatever you focus on expands. It is also said, whatever you give attention to becomes attractive to you. So wherever you put your focus, your attention tends to stick more to it, and then it tends to become more absorbing. Even attractive, even negative things can become attractive. Even things we're repulsed have a certain attraction, in the sense that when you're repulsed by something, you often think about it. Even you don't want to think about it. Why would you want to think about something if it repulses you? It's like when we're angry, we may be thinking about the thing or the cause of our anger, but why would we really want to dwell on it? It's not giving us any pleasure, at least not, maybe giving some perverted pleasure, but not real pleasure. But that's the nature of repulsion. It draws our attention. So wherever there's attention, our consciousness tends to expand around that thing, and it tends to grow on us, which is very good if we give our attention to Krishna, and very bad if we give it to other things which take us away from Krishna. So if you keep this analogy in your mind of the seed, and then you can begin to think, well, what kind of seeds would I like to plant in my mind? What kind of thoughts would I like to plant in my mind? And you'll see that whatever thoughts you plant, they'll grow. They'll become more powerful. So if we have the right thoughts which are in line with our goals, are in line with ourselves, our spiritual reality, the spiritual identity and spiritual reality, in line with the principles of bhakti, then that all grows in the right way towards where we want to go. And you can experiment with this, and if you reflect on your life, you'll see that this is actually what's happening. But just meditate on the concept of planting thought, proper thoughts. Now, a lot of people plant negative thoughts because they have, some people have self-doubt, or they're just habituated, the mind's habituated to think in a certain way, and they don't really do anything about it. So I just wanted to address that. What we're doing today is kind of summarizing everything that we're going to be talking about on this subject. But I one of the things that I found to be important for people is dealing with the reality that when the mind is in a negative space, or if we have a conditioning, we're habitually negative, or we have habitual self-doubt, or any kind of habitual thinking that is in any way detrimental to our well-being, particularly detrimental to our Krishna consciousness, often what happens is we come to a space where we're thinking, well, I don't really know how to deal with this. Any of you ever felt that way? Like you're kind of trapped in a certain way of thinking, or it's a way you always think, and it just keeps coming up, and you just think it's kind of a part of you, and that's just how you are. It's your nature, and you can't really do much about it. And I would suggest that we can always do something about it. And I would suggest that if we say we can't, there may be a reason that we don't want to. But I don't think we should ever say we can't, because then that puts us into a corner. So it's very, very valuable, whatever the situation is, or however difficult it may be for us, however difficult it may be to control the mind, to never come to this point and just accept this is the way it is. It can't be any different. It's been this way for so long, therefore it must continue that way. I've always been this way. And of course, if we think that way, obviously it continues that way. So fundamentally, as a fundamental principle, if we want to learn how to control the mind, we have to start on this platform that it is possible, that there are options that I have that I presently may not be aware of. And even if I'm not aware of them, at least enter the process open to the reality, or open to the possibility that I can control my mind in ways which perhaps in the past I was not able to do. I can recondition or reprogram myself, because that's really what Krishna consciousness is. It's a process of reprogramming the mind from its conditioned state to its purified state. So if we say we can't, then we're really undermining the power of the process of Krishna consciousness. So we're undermining the power and effect of the holy name on our consciousness. Now, it's understandable, because we're conditioned, that we tend to gravitate back towards our conditioning. Even sometimes we may transcend it for a day or two or a week or more, and then we fall back into it. And then we think, aha, just see, this is how I am. I always knew I was like that, and I can't really change that. No, we should never think that way. That will defeat our, will be defeated from the beginning. So I want to welcome Sunil. So Carol is asking where emotions come from. Yeah, the mind, the thoughts become emotions on a more subtle level. Manjesh is saying, or asking, or repeating something I said, if you think about something too much, you might actually do it. That is, of course, Krishna states that in the Gita, Dayato Vishayam Pungsam. Whenever you meditate on something, what happens is you become attracted, you become attached to it. The more you meditate on something, the more you think about it, Well, the more you think about something, either you become more attracted or more repulsed, but something more is going to happen. So if it is something you have some attraction for, even if that attraction is, even if it's a perverted attraction, it's not like you really want it, but temporarily you're attracted to it, or you're being pulled to be attracted to it, although in your saner moments you may walk away from it. So the more that you meditate on it, yes, the more you'll become attached to it. And then at a certain point, you'll tell yourself, I have to have it. So one of the things that we teach in our sexual purity courses is that the more you meditate on it, the more difficult it becomes to give up. And it's much more easily given up before the attachment stage. And the attachment stage comes from the it comes right after the contemplation stage. So there's contemplation, which evolves to attachment. The next stage is lust. Lust is the stage where I have to have it. Attachment, you have a better chance of getting out of it. The contemplation stage, you have a greater chance of getting out of it. It requires less effort. If you're just thinking about something and you realize this thought is not good, it's easy to give up that thought, or easier to give it up than at the attachment stage, where attachment is, you want it. It's becoming very attractive, and you're really checking it out, and you're thinking, I'd really like to have this. This looks really nice. That's going on with thoughts. You know, we're entertaining thoughts that are attractive to us, and the more we entertain them, the more we become attracted. And then at the attachment stage, can't stop thinking about it. It's very, very difficult to pull ourselves away from it. So, of course, that's great if you're Krishna conscious and you become attached to thinking about Krishna. It's not so good if you're not Krishna conscious. It's not so good if you're in a state of mind where you're being pulled around by your mind and becoming attached to things that are not really helping you. And then it becomes difficult, to say the least. The more you're attached, the more difficult it becomes. So, so Bhakti and Carol says, my thoughts are returning again and again to the problem I'm trying to work with. So it is difficult to work with the mind on the gross level, and it's easier to work with the mind on the more subtle level when you go to the root cause of the thoughts, which is, although everyone may not know that, but you have a subconscious mind which is programmed. And so the conscious mind is living out the programming of the subconscious mind. So if the subconscious mind changes, then the thoughts change. So you might say, well, how do I know what's going on in the subconscious mind? Well, you may not always know. But if you begin to look at the patterns, then you might be able to consider there's something under repeated, something that's going on under those repeated patterns, which may be causing those thoughts. Like some thoughts are caused by just an emptiness. We feel empty, so we're attracted to certain things, which cannot fulfill us, but because of the emptiness there, we're attracted. And if that emptiness is filled, then the mind will no longer be attracted to it. Whereas on the mind level, sometimes you're trying to fight it and you're really fighting a losing battle because you're not fighting it at the root, at the cause. It's a really, really important point. And that's why, and see, the problem is that if you're not fighting it at the cause, what happens is that those thoughts tend to come up again and again. And then you begin that thinking, well, I can't really control this. I've tried. It's been 20 years and it's still there. Because you may not be dealing on a root level, on a core level. And that's why when you're trying to control your mind, it becomes more like a Band-Aid solution. Or you haven't transcended it. I've got a... what do I have on my head? I have a wasp on my head. What should I do? Just go, wasp! Now he's going to come and attack me. Okay. So, I said maybe we can give an analogy of the wasp. The mind is like a wasp. And it's always trying to attack you. Now we have a brave soldier here. Uddhava's going to escort the wasp wasp out of our studio here. So a friend had spoken to me a few weeks ago, and he was saying he has a very difficult time with his mind. And he was talking about faith. Wasp was walking that way. So we may have to make a little noise here. Don't worry. So he was saying, well, I have difficulty with my faith in Krishna consciousness. And he said, I've had difficulty with it for many, many years. And I said, you know, it might not be your faith that's the problem. Your faith, your lack of faith, might really be more of a symptom of a deeper problem. And I don't think anyone had brought that idea up to him. So I suggested, I said, do you think your faith is a lack, your lack of faith is an excuse? And what I meant by that was, is it that you really don't want to surrender to Krishna? And you need, and you're looking for an excuse not to surrender? And so, if you don't have faith, that becomes an excuse. And he said, well, I never thought of that, but that makes sense. But faith really wasn't the issue. The issue was the unwillingness to surrender. And the lack of faith was kind of his way out. He would say, I don't have faith. But that was just to rationalize why he was not surrendering. Faith really wasn't the issue. So there was a more subtle cause. So sometimes in looking at the mind, we want to look at the subtle causes. You know, maybe our mind is thinking in a certain way and we're having difficulty controlling it, but there's a deeper cause that perhaps we're afraid of placing our faith in Krishna. Perhaps we're afraid of giving ourselves a little bit too much to Krishna. Perhaps we're afraid of doing the things that would be necessary to keep the mind under control. And if we're not confronting those deeper issues, then we can't really control the mind on the grosser levels. We can only control it on the grosser level if there's no deeper, subtle cause that's causing that thought. I mean, sometimes there isn't. Sometimes it's just the environment is pulling us. We're attracted, we're conditioned, and so therefore we're attracted to certain environments which are not conducive to our spiritual life, so we just may be pulled. So, for us who are practicing spiritual life, it's of utmost importance to learn how to deal with the mind, and I think we need to start with just understanding what the mind is and how it works, and so that we can gradually become more detached. One of the big problems that I see in dealing with the mind is that we don't detach ourselves from it. We don't look at it and say, oh, that mind. We say, my mind. When we talk, I'm having trouble with my mind. Do you ever say, oh, that mind is giving me trouble? Does anyone say that? You ever say that, Uddhava? Say, my mind, I have trouble with my mind. But just by saying that mind, how does it say? Everybody out there, say that mind. Say my mind, and then say that mind. And then say my mind, and that mind. And then say my mind, and that mind. And you feel a difference? You feel a shift when you say that mind? You say, this mind, that mind. Oh, this mind, that mind. I think you all feel a shift. When you say that mind, you feel a detachment. I am the mind, or I have a mind. What feels right to say? What feels right to you? I am the mind, I have a mind. I have a mind. That we know that's the truth. But in reality, do we think that way on a subconscious level? I have a mind. Generally, we tend to identify with the mind, and that's where we have our problems. If we cannot detach ourselves from our mind, we often cannot, then we can't observe the mind and how it's working and what it's doing. When you detach yourself, you can observe it. A lot of times what happens is when the mind is going astray, we become upset because we think we're going astray. You ever feel that way? When your mind is going astray, you think, I'm going astray? You're not going astray. Your mind's going astray. Interesting thought, isn't it? Think about that. Oh, I was thinking of this. I'm deviating from Krishna consciousness. Not necessarily. You're definitely not deviating if you don't do anything about it, about what your mind is doing. So, the mind is going astray. The mind is having its own program. Yeah, it's like you're on channel 7 and your mind's on channel 22, and it's totally incongruent. There's no alignment. But because you think I am the mind, subconsciously at least, you don't think I have a mind. You think I am deviating. But that's really strange because thinking that way means you're leaving yourself and your identity as yourself, and now you identify with the mind. You think, I'm going off. You're not going off, your mind's going off. So when you see your mind going off, then you can say, that mind is going off. It's interesting, isn't it? How just using that terminology will detach you. That mind. Oh, that mind. And so we have this example in our tradition, particularly you find prayers. Raghunath Goswami has written prayers called Mana Siksha. And Siksha means instructions, and Mana means mind. So what does Mana Siksha mean? It means instructions to the mind, instructions for the mind. And who is giving the instructions? He's giving instructions to his mind. You know, we know that. We know the prayers of Govindadas. Bhaja Hure Mana Si Nanda Nandana. He's doing the same thing. He's talking to his mind. He's giving his mind lessons. Very interesting. Only a person who is detached, who understands, who experiences that I am not the mind, would do that. But if we identify with the mind, we wouldn't talk to the mind. We would think the talking of the mind is me. That's who it is. You know how your mind talks to you? Hey, Prabhu, you're the best thing that ever happened to in the universe. Your mind ever tell you that? Any of you out there? You're the greatest. You're the best. Nobody's as good as you. Or your mind will say, you're the worst. You're the lowest. You're so stupid. Everyone is smarter than you. You are worthless. Your mind may say that. But it's just your mind talking. It's not you. That's not your voice. That's not who you are. It's the mind. So that's where we get hung up, because we think that voice is us. And when we think it's us, what do? We believe it. Right? Why do we believe it? Because it must be true, because it's us. It's me. That's who I am. So, look at your mind as that mind. Oh, that mind. That rascal mind. That rascal mind. Detach. Separate from the mind. I have a mind, or I am the mind? No, I have a mind. And so, the mind is conditioned through lifetimes and lifetimes and lifetimes. So when we come to Krishna consciousness, we, the soul, in conjunction with the intelligence, make a decision to give our life to Krishna. And we can do that because we have the freedom of choice. And Srila Prabhupada said, The intelligence is the next door neighbor of the soul. So they're right together, the next door neighbor. So it's right next to the, you know, you might think, well, false ego. The Prabhupada said, the next door neighbor of the soul is intelligence. So you can see that you, as a spirit soul, understand that you're a servant of Krishna. And by employing your intelligence, you can always carve out that path through the maze and the jungles of the material world and through all the attractions of the material world. You can remain aloof as a spiritual, as long as you remember, I am a spiritual being. You can make choices to serve Krishna. Even in neophyte stage, you can do that. You can make a decision to be Krishna conscious and do that. It's amazing when you think about it, that through all the conditioning that we've been through for lifetimes, if we just make that decision, I want to be Krishna conscious, we can situate ourselves as spiritual beings and begin to serve Krishna, even from a most conditioned state. But when that happens, because the mind is conditioned through lifetimes, and what does that mean, conditioned through lifetimes? Srila Prabhupada has told us that when the soul transmigrates, he does not transmigrate with his gross body, but he transmigrates with what? It's not just the soul transmigrating into a new body. He carries the subtle body, which means the mind, the intelligence, and ego. So how we've developed in one life, or how we've conditioned ourselves in one life, will carry with us to the next life. So the mind is conditioned by lifetimes in the material world. So here we are making this effort to be a devotee, and then there we're carrying along this mind. And now we have to convince the mind, because the mind is thinking, what is going on here? I am conditioned to think in a certain way, and now you're telling me, don't think that way. So there's conflict. So we, as soul, or we, as the one who controls in the mind through intelligence, we have to start reprogramming that mind and saying, okay, mind, this is the new program. This is the new plan is Krishna consciousness. Or the new plan is whatever the new plan is. The new plan is we're going to be chanting. The new plan is we're going to be nice to people. The new plan is we're going to stop criticizing and fault-finding, and we're going to give up the envy, and we're going to be disciplined. This is the new program, and I know that's going to be hard for you, but this is what we're doing. So we have to do that. It's part of the program. Okay, let's see what you're saying. How long have we had the same mind since the beginning? So, does the mind carry our samskaras? Yes. Samskaras are previous impressions? Yes. If it is conditioned and stay with us? Yes. So, we can recondition it. We can reprogram it. That's the good news. I mean, that's the whole process of Krishna consciousness. And the point here is that we can look at it, we can talk to it, we can reason with it. We can go into the subtle aspects of the mind and think, okay, well, what am I thinking? Like, for example, I notice in myself, and if you just start to notice, you can see how the mind's working. And as you see how the mind's working, you can begin to understand on a more subtle level what would have to be going on in terms of thoughts and beliefs on a subtle level to have a certain thinking pattern on the grosser level. So I notice sometimes when it becomes in the morning, when it's time to chant japa, that I enter the japa with a negative mindset. And the negative mindset is, I'd rather not be doing this now. I have other things to do. Or I really would rather read right now. I don't feel like chanting. And I don't think I'm going to chant very well because I don't feel like it. And I'm very distracted. So I'm coming in with these thoughts, which are not obviously conducive thoughts for chanting. So then I look back and I say, okay, why are these thoughts there? Well, I know one reason the thoughts are there. Often one of the reasons is because my rounds have not been good in the last week or two or three or month or two or three or year or two or three or lifetimes or two or three. But more specifically, in the recent past, they haven't been good. And because they haven't been good, the bad experience has created a negative association with japa. I don't know if you know about negative associations, but negative associations are, for example, let's say every time you picked up your japa beads, somebody came and hit you in the head with a bat, a baseball bat. So, and that went on every day for a month. You'd have some pretty bad connotations with japa. Just touch my beads, that's painful. Now, when we chant poorly, what do you think's going on? If it's difficult to finish our rounds, we're not relishing it. What do you think's going on a subtle level? We're impregnating, or we're connecting boredom and pain and distraction with japa. So then when it comes time to chant, there's this program going on a subtle level. So even when I'm trying to chant well, that program is operating. And it makes it really hard to relish. It makes it really hard to focus. I'm sure you've all had that experience. That sometimes you're really trying to focus and you can't. There may be a programming there that you've developed. And the programming is, I really can't focus. And where did that programming come from? Well, it came from all those times you chanted and you didn't focus. Or chanting is not relishable or it's boring. Well, where did that come from? It came from all those times you chanted and you were bored. So you see what I'm saying is when you're trying to fight it on the gross level, if you don't reprogram the subtle level, it may not happen. So the natural question would be, how do you reprogram the way you think? Well, one of the things that I've learned to do, and Patanjali says this also, says reframe your thinking. And how do you reframe your thinking? Well, you might say, if I have bad experience with japa, isn't the way to reframe it to have good experiences? And I would say, yeah, but you can reframe it without those good experiences, which is very, very interesting to note. It's like, if you're all sleeping out there, you're not paying attention, or you're doing your email while you're listening, what I just said is really powerful. That even when your mind is conditioned in a certain way, you have the power to reframe it without having to have positive experience to reframe it. Because positive experiences reframe, because experience reframes. When someone has a bad experience, like a bad relationship, what does that do? What it often does is, let's say, because I'm a man, I'll speak from my perspective. I have a bad relationship with a woman. And it's so bad that when that relationship is over, then when I see women, it makes me feel bad. I just think pain, right? So obviously, every relationship I could have with another woman wouldn't have to be painful. But coming out of that experience, I may tend to think that way. It may just be red flags. Women, pain, that's what it means. So I could have the power to reframe the way I think about women. I could choose to look at it differently, understand it differently, so I have a more neutral attitude. So I don't look at women and think, these women, they're all bad, and they all cause suffering, and I don't want to have anything to do with them. Of course, if you want to be a sannyasi, that might be a little helpful to think that way, or at least partially that way. But for the sake of this example, I just want to show that if you recognize that way of thinking is not proper, it's not good, you can ask yourself, what would be a better way of thinking about it? Because now I've conditioned myself to think in one way. What would be a better way? So you'd think of a better way of thinking. Well, say, no, I should respect women. This was a bad relationship. It's not indicative of any relationship. Our chemistry didn't work, or I was immature, whatever it was. But women, I respect them as mother. I respect them as spiritual beings, like that. So you have the will, you have the choice to reframe your thinking. So how would we do this with japa? one of the things that I do to get out of the negative thinking is to create positive thinking, which, as Patanjali said, create the opposite. So, so when this negative thing like is conditioning me to think, oh, this job is going to be boring, and I really don't want to do it, and I'd rather do something else, I recondition myself by telling myself in the present tense, I will relish. I'm going to relish. I can't wait to chant. I'm going to relish every round. I'm going to relish this time with Krishna. It's going to be sweet. The holy name, the chanting is so powerful. It's so important. It's the essence of Krishna consciousness. So I'm reframing my approach. So originally I was making the point that sometimes we get in these mindsets and then we think that's the only way I can think because I'm conditioned to think that way. Or we look at circumstances and the circumstances convince us that I must think this way because of these circumstances. So if we don't get this, then we're going to be battling with our minds until we become very, very Krishna conscious, because we'll feel helpless in reprogramming them. So this is so important. And that's the whole process of spiritual life, is reprogram the way the mind is thinking. And you'll see in Prabhupada's instructions to us, you'll see that that's what he's doing. He's not saying, okay, I know you're conditioned, so you just have to deal with it. And then gradually you become Krishna conscious, and then someday when you're very elevated, then your mind will always think of Krishna. No, he's saying right now, this is how to think. So right now you can reprogram your thinking. Now, also, let's look at the japa thing. Let's go back to that, because it may get it may get even more subtle. When it gets more subtle, it might have to deal with our beliefs about the holy name. Maybe there's a lack of faith that the holy name is really that powerful. Well, where would that lack of faith come from? Well, one place it might come from is your experience, that if you don't chant well, then you're not really experiencing the full potency of the holy name. So then you develop a belief based on experience that the holy name, at least for you, is not that powerful, or that you cannot chant a holy name that's that powerful because, for whatever reason, that you convince yourself you can't do it. And so now you have a belief that you can't really chant well. Or maybe on some level you have a belief that you could not relish the holy name. So now you pick up your beads and you start chanting. And guess what happens? You don't chant well, because your belief is creating that experience. You've already set yourself up for that experience. So now you might doubt when I say set yourself up for good japa with positive thoughts. You might doubt that that could happen. But you know when you have a negative, you get a negative experience. So because you know that, therefore the opposite must be true. That if you set yourself up with a positive mindset, if you look at your beliefs and say, I have to change those beliefs, I have to alter those beliefs, that the holy name is my most valued possession, that my time with the holy name is the most valuable part of my day, that my connection with the holy name is the most important process of bhakti, that the holy name is the most valuable asset I have in my life. You create those beliefs rather than the I can't beliefs or I will never beliefs or lack of this or lack of that. You create beliefs around what the holy name really does. And then you enter japa, you're entering in an altered frame of reference with altered beliefs. And then those beliefs become your reality as you begin chanting. You begin to experience what you believe. So you have the power to do that. I think one of the most wonderful things that Krishna has done for us is he created the world and we are conditioned by it, but he gave us the ability to, even when we're conditioned, to choose, to have options in which we can re-evaluate, re-function, reprogram, take on new viewpoints and attitudes, that we have those choices. and that we can do it at any moment, and that it can alter our whole state of consciousness. It can alter the whole way the mind functions, so that we no longer have to be slaves of the mind. Because if we just had to be slaves of the mind, then there's really no point in making effort. We have no free will, so why make, if you only have one choice, then you have no choice, and you have no free will, and then you can't blame anyone or anything for what's happening, because you're just going along for the ride, and you're locked up in the cell, and that's it. But that's not true. So Krishna is, if we're locked up, it's because we locked ourselves up. So let's see what you're all saying there. We have Truth. And Truth is asking, how can people who are conditioned to think that they are, let's say, white, for instance, shed that false identification? We carry out behavior according to racial programs that are not necessarily conducive to growth. This is in a sense a very deep question. The question really is saying, can we, in our conditioned state, detach ourselves or disentangle ourselves from racial identification? And I would say, yes, we can. And I would say, secondly, it is extremely difficult to do so, because just as you see, look at and the truth that, let's say, you're American. So if you're American, I'm American, Carol's American, Manjesh is Canadian, same thing. Even though he's Indian, he's born in North America. So if we all hang out together, we're all pretty much alike. We have the same mannerisms, same gestures. We basically think the same way. We've probably seen the same movies, read the same books, eaten the same food. Our culturally, we're very similar. Now, if you're raised, if you're African American, you might be a little different culturally. Your language might be a little different. The way you walk might be a little different. The food you eat might be a little different. The clothes you wear might be different. Cultures might be a little different. So we are intertwined with our culture. And just as we're intertwined with that culture, it makes up our identity. So it can be difficult to disassociate with that identity. It is that identity that gives us some form of security. It is that identity which we can use to take advantage of others or lord over others. I'm better than you because I'm this. Or it's that identity in which we feel comfortable with. This is who I am. This is how I think of myself. So, just as we did this meditation, I am the mind or I have a mind, it's nice to do the meditation, I have a body, I am the body, or I have a body. I am the body, I have a body. I am the body, I have a body. This body, that body. We always say this body. What about that body? That body of mine. That body. That's the process of Krishna consciousness, becoming more and more disintegrating the false identity. So it's not really something that you can just easily do. But I would say you can do it more rapidly if you isolate the conditioning and begin to work on that conditioning. And then, of course, gradually, as you become more detached and you become situated in your identity as a servant of Krishna, and that transcends all other identities. I mean, that's why I was pausing when you asked your question, because I was thinking, well, is there really a simple answer to this? because I would say Prabhupada would generally or likely answer this question by saying something as simple as just don't act like you're the body. And that if you don't act like you're the body, then you'll realize you're not the body gradually. Just don't act like a body. And if you're white, don't act like you're white. And if you're black, don't act like you're black. Act like you're a servant of Krishna. And don't identify with the cultural paradigms around the body. You know, you often see that when people move from one country to another, even though they live in that country for 10 or 20 years, if they don't move into that country until they're young adults, they maintain some of their some of the accent of their of the country they were born in. Have you noticed that? Like you may ask somebody, how long have you lived here? And they'll say, well, I've lived in America for 30 years, but they've got an accent. And you think, 30 years here and you still have an accent? That's amazing. And the reality is, unless they move when they're young, they never get rid of their accent. When they come, when they're like 20 years old, most people don't get rid of the accent entirely. When they come when they're 10 or 8, yes. So I look at that and I think, that's just how we are. We're conditioned to think I'm this body, or a particular kind of body, black, white, Hispanic, Chinese, whatever. And just as that accent lingers on 20, 30, 40 years, so this lingering of identification, which is impregnated within the culture we grew up, it affects us. And all the conditioning that we've been through, it's hard to shed it. So therefore, we at least try to act like we're not the body as far as possible. And one of the ways to do that is to treat others like they're not the body. So I don't know if that perfectly answered your question. Shedding the false identification. Well, like you say, if you maintain false identification, excuse me, it's not conducive to growth. I think that's a key factor in there. If you want to grow, if you want to advance in Krishna consciousness, then we'll see a parallel between your effort to apply the process and your desire to advance or your desire to grow. And naturally, if you want to grow, you'll be more inclined, you'll be more able to apply the process. It'll be more important for you. Okay, so Dr. Patrick is speaking to Manjesh in French about the weather. Well, it's cold. But he said très chaud. What does that mean? Cold? Oh, that's hot. Oh, yeah. It's probably hotter up where you are than it is down here. What are we having down here? We're having a cold. It's like really cold in Alachua. It's like we're having like the coldest July. It's the coldest July I've ever seen. I actually got cold last weekend. Okay. So, oh my God, it feels like 42 in Toronto. Manjesh, when is the weather going to cool off? Because I'm going up there, I'm going close this weekend. What's the prediction? I'll be going up to the northern part of America and it'll be warmer. No, I'm going to Buffalo. Rochester, which is near Toronto. Anyway, so let's hear from Bhakti and Carol. She says, today I changed how I thought about one aspect of a problem. I began to think I was too serious and relating to someone else who was more of a free spirit, who was different norms. Thinking like that, I could forgive them. It's only one aspect of the problem. Is this similar to reframing? Yeah. It's like you're looking at something in one way. And a lot of times we're looking at something in one way, and that one way that we're looking at it is causing us to be upset or causing us to be angry at somebody. Or it can be causing so many things that are not conducive to Krishna consciousness, not even conducive to normal, peaceful life. And so we can think, well, is the way I'm looking at it the only way? Is there another way? Is there a possible other way? And then you might consider, what are other ways that we could look at it? Just like, you know, sometimes when a friend or a roommate or a husband or wife doesn't come home on time, you could get really, really upset. They promised me they would come home on time. They're probably out partying, or they're probably out this or that and something, and they don't care about me. That's one viewpoint, and that would make you upset. Another viewpoint could be, well, probably we're busy and they left the office late, or maybe there was an accident in the freeway. You know, there's just, that's reframing. You could say that's reframing in a more understanding way as opposed to a condemning way. So it's a valuable tool to consider there are more viewpoints than my own, and I could adopt a viewpoint that may be more purifying, more helpful, more understanding. So forgiving also requires sometimes looking at things from a different viewpoint, from another person's vantage point. You know, I don't know if I told you this story, but I'll tell it to you now. Cool down by Friday. Okay. Supposed to rain. Okay, so here's a story. I may have told you this before, but I think it relates to you, Carol. There was a lion cub named Kashi. And Kashi was somehow abandoned, or he lost his family as a lion cub. And he wandered into a herd of sheep, and the sheep accepted him. And this herd of sheep, they liked to cuddle together, and he had soft fur, so they liked to cuddle with him also. So he grew up with them, and it was a family, and they would huddle and cuddle and snuggle. They were the huddling, cuddling, and snuggling group. And so they were all very close, and he learned to talk like a lamb. He didn't scream like a lion. He just said, "Baa." And so basically he became a sheep. But the problem was when he got older. What do you think the problem was when he got older? He really didn't look like a sheep. Of course, he didn't look like a sheep as a cub, but it became more noticeable because he was much, much bigger than them, and he wasn't so cute anymore. So they didn't like him, and they ignored him. They just thought, he's weird. He's really this. I mean, they thought he was a sheep also. They didn't really know, and they thought, he's really weird. And they just ignored him. And so he was living alone, and he couldn't snuggle and cuddle with them anymore, so he was really depressed. And after a couple of years of this, he just couldn't take it. He just left. And he was terribly depressed. So he was living alone in the forest, and someone came across him and said, "Hey, lion, how's it going?" And he said, "Bah, bah." And the person said, "Bah." He said, "Lions don't say bah." And Kashi said, "Well, I'm not a lion. I'm a sheep." And the person said, "No, you're not. You're a lion." He said, "I am?" He said, "Yeah, look at you. You're not a sheep. You're a lion." He's looking at himself. And he's saying, "Oh, my Govinda. I mean, oh, my God." Or maybe he said, "Oh, my Govinda." He said, "Oh my Govinda, you're right. I'm not a sheep." And he'd been like depressed for 3 years, thinking he was some kind of weird sheep mutation. And he was like, you know, seeing the lion psychiatrist, and it was just a big problem. And so He goes, and then the person said, repeat after me. I'm a lion. And so Kashiko says, I'm a lion. He goes, no, repeat it like you mean it. I'm a lion. And Kashi says, I'm a lion. Then repeat it again. I'm a lion. So Kashi's excited. And he gets over his depression because he realizes he's not a sheep. And now he's happy being a lion. This is really wonderful, you know, the king of the forest. So one of the things this story teaches us is that there's a situation, something happens to you, right? And then you interpret it a certain way. Kashi interpreted that he was a sheep. And he was just a weird sheep. That was his interpretation. So when the other person explained to him that you're a lion, there was a new interpretation. And with the interpretation came a different way of thinking and a different way of acting. So what happens to us is not really what the problem is, but the problem is what we tell ourselves that happened to us. So Kashi's telling himself he's a sheep, and that's where his problem came from. So something happens to you, or you have an interchange, you have an exchange with this person, and then they treat you a certain way or do something, then you tell yourself this is what happened. And then based on the story you tell yourself, you react. But you could always change the story, right? You could see it in a different way. Well, what you think happened, is that really what happened? Is there something more to it? Is there a different aspect? Did the person really say that because they hate you and they're trying to get back at you? Did the person really do this because they're not really a good devotee, or they don't like Prabhupada? See? So what you tell yourself happened, that's what causes your reaction. I don't know if that related exactly to what you said. You said, I began to think I was too serious relating to someone else. And you change the way of you change the way you thought. Yeah, so it's a kind of reframing, and reframing the story. What you tell yourself happened. What you tell yourself is happening. Okay, Manjesh says, say that 10 times fast. Manjesh says, I can't do it. Manjesh says, I think it is difficult to change my mind and changing my viewpoints to someone else's vantage points, but I will try to do that this week. Okay, so Manjesh has said something very important. Welcome, Bhakta Pallav. So he said something very important. And everyone please pay attention. I think it is difficult to change my mind. I just want to focus on that statement. And changing my viewpoints to someone else's vantage point. So Manjesh is saying it's difficult. So yeah, we all know that's difficult. Here's the problem. As long as you have the belief, Manjesh, that it's difficult, you're never going to be able to do it. Because that belief is confining you to a certain way of seeing, a certain way of thinking, a certain way of behaving. You have to change the belief. You can't fight it on the level of just trying. So that belief is working against you. What would be a better belief? Better belief would be, it is possible to change my mind and viewpoints. You know, you can see something according to someone else's viewpoint without agreeing with it, right? So if you have the belief that you can do that, you'll be able to do it. If your belief is it's difficult, I can guarantee you 100% money back guarantee, it's going to be difficult for you. So like a more positive way to approach it, Manjesh, would be, I am open to other people's points of view. I am open to understanding their points of view. I will happily be open to their points of view. I want to be open to their points of view. I can be open. It's possible. People can be open to other people's points of view. It's good to be open to other points of view. If this is how you approach it, then you will see it. You'll be able to do it. If you approach it that it's going to be difficult, then however you approach it is the experience you'll get from it. I don't know if you've noticed that in your life. Have any of you noticed that? That how you approach something is the experience you get from it? Ever approach something and thought, this is easy, and had like a really difficult time? Usually not. Ever approach something and you think, this is like impossible, had a real easy time? Generally not. So, so you train your mind in a more subtle level, not just, well, I'll just go in and try. You have to change the beliefs that are causing you to think the way you're thinking. So Carol says, yes, instead of thinking they did wrong by my way of thinking, I realized they're who they are and could not accept that. They're who they are and could accept that. Yeah, so you reframed your story, and then how it affected you changed. Surprises, yeah. So, it's 9:14. Time flies when you're having fun. How can we relate this to our humility? Okay, humility. Well, the mind sometimes demands respect. Have you noticed that? We want to be respected. We want to be honored. We want to be recognized by others. So the mind often demands that. It even becomes attached to it. We can be very focused on it. So we can reprogram our minds. I would say in the reprogramming, it's probably a better way of approaching it, is to first understand, well, what is lacking in me that I want this respect? Because the desire for respect is coming from a need that's not being fulfilled. So we should first look at, what is that need I'm trying to fulfill by having people respect me? And if we can isolate that need, perhaps we can respect ourselves more. Sometimes we want others to respect us because we have no respect for ourselves. Sometimes a person who has respect for themselves and values themselves will not need the value and respect of others. So you want to look at those things. And what am I trying to get out of this? What is the lack? Why do I need this? And then reframe your thinking. One way you could reframe your thinking is, it's not that I need respect, I need to offer respect. I think a lot of times the very things we're looking for will satisfy us, not when we get them, but when we give them. So we're looking for respect, but the thing that will satisfy us the most is the giving of respect. Don't you think giving respect will satisfy you more than getting it? I'm sure you do. So perhaps you have a belief that if you get respect, you'll be happy. You could change that belief to a more Krishna-conscious belief that if I give respect, I will be elevated and I will be purified and I will be more happy. And so when the belief changes, then naturally it'll be easy to give respect. If the belief doesn't change, then you're just fighting it on the gross level of the mind again. You say, oh, my mind, you want respect. Stop wanting that respect, and you're trying to reason with it. But you can go below the mind and reprogram it. So I'm reprogramming you to understand that giving respect is something that I enjoy. Giving respect is something that elevates me. It's something I want to do. And gaining respect is not something that I want. It causes pain. So anything that causes pain, you'll avoid. And anything that gives you pleasure, you'll want to come closer to, you'll want to approach. So if you alter the way you're thinking about it, if you alter your beliefs about it and your attitudes, then it'll be more natural to give respect. It'll become part of who you are. So Carol is saying, well, I wish I could solve the rest of my problems this way. You can. Because at least any problem within the mind has a cause. And the cause is a subconscious way of thinking. Or maybe it's more conscious. And my whole point tonight was that you do have a choice of how you program your thinking. And that's very powerful. Isn't that a powerful thought? That you... In other words, most of us operate on this paradigm, well, I really don't have control. So whatever's happening, we just go along with. But really, that's just an excuse, because we do have control. You know where the word excuse comes from? It comes from the word ex and kusa. And kusa means cause, and ex means without. So whenever we make excuse, what we're saying is, there's no cause for it. It just happened. But what we're saying tonight is there is a cause for how we're thinking. So for everything you want to change, you look at the cause and think, well, what is going on? How am I thinking on the subconscious level? What's my programming? What are my beliefs about it? I could never do that. That's a belief. This will make me unhappy. That's another belief. I really need this. That's another belief. I need to be honored. If I'm not honored, I won't be happy. That's a belief. Change it. Do I need to honor others? If I don't honor others, I won't be happy. As soon as you change your belief, you won't need the honor, but you'll need to honor others. And that's how, and then your life changes. So look at anything in your life, and you can alter it if you choose. That's the good news. You can choose. So Pallav says, Prabhu, I think that Krishna took away an anartha that was hampering my chanting. Do I have to believe that it is true for it to really go away, or is it a fact that it has gone away? Well, well, if it's gone away, I think you believe it's gone away. But what I would say is that Krishna might have taken away the symptoms of it so that you can improve your chanting, but the roots of it could still be there. And you're just not experiencing it now because you're transcending it. So I would investigate that if I were you. A lot of times Krishna empowers us to achieve higher and higher levels of Krishna consciousness, in which sometimes we transcend the very causes of our problems so they don't affect us. But it doesn't mean the causes are not always there. Sometimes they're still there, we're just not being affected by it. So we want to be a little cautious and still, you know, be introspective enough to see that even though I'm not being affected by something, is it possible that in some way there is some of that is still rooted within me? I mean, I find this all the time in my life, that I think I'm completely over some problem or over some desire, and it could be years that I'm not affected by it, and then all of a sudden, boom, guard is down, and then there it is. And sometimes I can't believe it. I go, oh my God, I thought I was over that. So just, you know, be a little cautious about it. What's going on in Rochester? Oh, I have a business, and I do business there, and I'm going up there for a couple days to do some business to support my family, and then I will be in New York the following week, and in the city, and then off to California to do a. We've developed a course called the Bhakti Course, and we're doing an introduction to the Bhakti Course. And the Bhakti Course is going to be a weekend course on Bhakti, and there are going to be three levels in the course, and this course is going to be designed for people new to Krishna consciousness to get fully absorbed in the principles and practices through their own discovery of the value of Krishna consciousness. So that's going to be exciting. Rochester will not be so exciting, but California will be exciting. But if any of you live in Rochester, you can come and see me. Or I can come stay with you. You can drive down to Rochester and hang out. Because I'll be there Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and I could even be there Monday and Tuesday if I wanted to. Okay, so if you want to write me, just write me at Mahat, M-A-H-A-T, at AOL.com or on Facebook. Mahatma Das. Mahat at AOL. I don't even know my Facebook address. I guess it's Mahatma Das. All right, thank you very much. We'll see you next week. Hopefully next week. Next week, next Tuesday, yeah. Yeah, I think we can pull off next Tuesday, yes. The lighting might be bad, but we can pull it off. Okay, Hare Krishna. Have a good week, and reprogram your mind in Krishna consciousness.